Welcome back to Marvel's Voices. I'm your host, Angelique Roche, and today I am talking with the incredibly funny and talented Justin A. Reynolds, author of the newly released graphic novel Miles Morales Shockwaves. The book is available right now wherever you get your books and comics, so make sure you go check it out. But if you haven't read Justin's book yet, no spoilers, I promise. The story centers around an earthquake in Puerto Rico. Miles is helping his mother, Rio, organize a fundraiser, but of course, in the life of a superhero, nothing is ever that easy. When a new student's father disappears, Miles notices some connections that are little more than a coincidence. Y'all, this is such a fun story. We get new friends, new villains, some amazing cameos from some of my favorite superheroes, and of course, Miles learning how to balance being a superhero and a teenager. What could go wrong? Justin, thank you so much for coming on Marvel's Voices. You know, I've interviewed almost every person, mostly men of color, who have written Miles Morales in the last 5 years. And the coolest thing about it is that, you know, Saladin had his flavor. Jason had his flavor. I mean, Saladin still has his flavor. He's still writing Miles. And you have your own flavor to the stories that you're telling. Sure. But it's still very key and core to who Miles is, right?
It is. Like, that's the cool thing about Miles is that he's captured hearts and, like, minds and imaginations because he is so very diverse within himself that he gets to be, like, myriad things, right? He's not just, like, so we got the traditional Spider-Man himself and being, like, that quippy, witty, bantery dude. And then you add Miles, and it's like, okay, we still get all of the things that we love about Spider-Man. But one, we get somebody with even, like, more kick-ass powers and abilities. And then somebody who is younger and, like, coming up, has, like, an ear to the ground, like, knows what's relevant, like, right now, lives that experience at home, still has the private school thing, but also still is cool with the neighborhood kids. He's just the perfect dichotomy of, like, what it means to be, live in a world as a person of color and, like, to have to be, like, everything, right? Like, to encompass, like, everything. I mean, there's a reason why, like, Into the Spider-Verse does the numbers it does, right? Like, it's...
Right.
It's wild.
Well, and he has permission to be everything, right?
I think that's
the beauty of Miles for a lot of folks who love him is that he gets to write poetry about a girl when Jason writes him. He gets to, be in an art store looking for his easel in this brand new book. You know, he plays basketball. He gets to be multifaceted. He gets to be more than just what the stereotypes have said. So I want to take a step back. So I got to ask, before writing Miles Morales Shockwaves, were you a big comic book fan? And if so, how did you get into comics?
Yeah, 100%. I have loved comics since, infancy, basically. My sister and I, on the weekends, we'd go to the flea market with my mom. And, my mom always had like the 3 or 4 booths that she was really interested in. And my sister and I were like really just tagging along, one, because we had to, but two, with the hopes of like stopping at the comic book stand, which we almost always did. And they had like these mystery brown bags that were filled with comics that were like cheaper. You could afford them. You buy them and you didn't know what you were going to get in the brown bags. It was like people curating bags before curation was like cool. You know, it's like, okay, yo, here's the bag. Cost $2. See what you get. And I don't ever remember feeling like, oh man, this bag sucks. It was just a great experience no matter what was in there. Because I felt like there was always something in the panels that you could take, that there was like some type of storytelling that was interesting. There was some joke that really hit you, whatever it was. And I just remember that excitement. And then, we're trading comics and exchanging them and like sometimes hoarding them from each other. So I think that was just the start of the love affair. And I'm thankful because my mom, who was an educator and librarian, she always encouraged reading, obviously, but she didn't also try to like force a particular type of reading on me and say like, this is what it means to read like great literature. This is what the canon is. And if you step outside the boundary, oh, that has pictures in it. How dare you reduce yourself to something with illustrations, which is weird because we like as a society prize art. Right. And then we prize literature, but like you combine them, people are like, oh my God, what is this abomination of literature? And so it's weird. But my mom thankfully wasn't like that. She was just like, yo, you're reading and you love it. I read all the things. I read widely. And I think that is why I get to do the things that I get to do now, is because, you know, I didn't have anyone telling me not to do this or that or to stay in this lane. It was just like, yo, go where your curiosity takes you. And comics were a big part of that.
I love that. And shout out to Children of Librarians. Yo.
Yeah.
They are amazing people. Okay, so now I got to ask, do you have a favorite superhero?
I mean, like, and this is going to sound like I can't answer, but like, real talk, it's Miles. He captivated me in a way that I don't think any superhero ever has. You know, I'm always a person who's interested in origin stories and a person who is very interested in like the culture. What makes a person be who they are today? What was the formation, the events that led up to this event where we're at right now? And Miles' story is so fascinating because in a lot of ways, I feel like I can closely identify with the way that he was raised, with the values that he has, with the parents that he has, right? Preaching education and like staying on top of him and trying to embarrass him at, you know, every turn, all of that. And then just trying to be like an awkward kid growing up, like that real life stuff is, I think, the stuff, not just of my own childhood and adolescence, but like most of the people that I know, my friends, my family. And so that particular character, like in my own family, resonated so deeply. And so this is not a joke, but before they asked me to do it, I was talking to my agent, and you know, we have like these state of the kind of the union biannual talks where we're like, okay, let's see where we're at right now in terms of the goals that we have. And then at the end of it, I usually talk about my big long-term goals. Like, where do I want to be 2 years from now, 3 years from now, 5 years from now? And I said, I want to write for Marvel. I don't want to write Miles Morales. Put that into the universe. And I'm thinking like down the road, 2, 3 years, maybe we get there. And so then when the opportunity came knocking, it was just like, yo, the way the world works sometimes, you know?
I love it. And so now you have written a Miles Morales Spider-Man book. Welcome to the family.
Thank you.
Hey.
Thank you. It's an honor. It's an honor.
You know, you put this out in the universe. You've manifested. Like, what was your reaction when the project actually came your way?
It was crazy because, I mean, I was like, is this real? Is this life? I'm still kind of processing it, to be honest. Yeah, I did that. And I've had like the advanced copy for a while. So it's not like I'm just seeing it for the first time. But every time I see like my name on it or somebody tags me in something and Marvel's in it, I'm like, wait, like this is the stuff that dreams are made of. Like, it doesn't even make sense to me, because if you would have asked me, I mean, like, it took so long to kind of even break into the industry itself. I've been writing the same kind of stories forever. People just were like, oh, I'm not sure what the market is. I'm not sure, you know, if people are ready for that type of story, which we know means like diversity. And so it's wild now to see not only people starting to kind of get aboard that train that should have left the station a long time ago, but to do it like with the vehicle being Miles Morales. I mean, it's on some pinch me kind of stuff. It's really cool for sure.
I got to ask, because you were clearly a true Miles fan and a true Marvel fan. What did you like most about writing Miles? And were there aspects of Miles's character that you wanted to highlight or specifically develop in the story?
Yes, that's a great question. What I like about Miles, outside of the fact that really, like for real, his superpowers are almost not fair. How can you ultimately defeat Miles? Like, I don't know if you can. He has everything. He has like everything that Spider-Man has times two. So what I really enjoyed was trying to figure out then what would be a challenge for Miles, a kind of challenge that maybe he hasn't necessarily seen. What would be something that would almost truly be impossible to completely correct? And the thing that I was kind of thinking about, just like reading the news and like kind of just paying attention to what was happening in the world, was the earthquakes that were happening in Puerto Rico, and it's like a long history of earthquakes happening there and throughout that region, and just kind of the devastation that they have on the people who live there. And I started thinking about, like, I really wanted to talk about the cultural elements of Miles. I wanted to talk about like his family history, because that's what makes me and that's what defines me, good and bad. And I wanted to talk about like, where is Miles coming from? What is his foundation? And it starts with his parents. And so it's like, okay, here's an opportunity for us to, one, engage with a culture that doesn't necessarily get its desserts, especially here in this country, even though we're closely linked. And so an opportunity to kind of delve into the beauty of that island and the people that live there, the resiliency that they have, and think about like how that foundation contributes to the way that we see Miles and interact Miles. Like, he's strong and resilient. It's not random. That's not a coincidence that he happens to have those roots and those cultural roots. He's African-American and Puerto Rican. And so it was an honor to kind of be able to explore some of those cultural elements throughout the story. And honestly, the other part was just like, at the end of the day, he's an awkward Black dude, you know, with corny jokes, dad jokes sometimes that don't land. I have him like, he can't dance in my version. You know, that's like, it's me.
You were wrong for that renegade scene. You were wrong.
I had to like, you know, that was myself. I was just trying to make myself, you know, redeeming myself, making myself feel like there's still hope. You know, yeah, I can't do this thing over here all that well. You guys go ahead and knock out TikTok. That's dope. But I'm going to be over here swinging through the city. Like, that's what I'm on. You know what I mean? Like, I'm going to be over here drawing and writing and kicking it that way. So I'm fascinated by Miles. I think he's like the most fascinating character.
So I got to say, I love the book. I'm a little biased because it is Miles. And I love the inspiration that you kind of used for the book. And you really wove in these cool current events, the historical references, including some dance trends, as we just mentioned, but also Arbitration Rock.
Yeah, yeah.
But you live in Ohio, though. I just want to be clear. And you are a little older than our main crew of Miles, Yankee, and Kyle.
For sure.
Were there elements that you definitely wanted to explore and set in the setting and the plot? And what was your research like? Did you like get on TikTok and be like, the dance is the renegade and that's what we going?
Well, you know, it's so crazy because like, as you know, it takes so long from conception to actually publishing something. And so in like my novels, I typically don't include a lot of pop cultural references because it feels dated as soon as the book is published. It's like, that's we're already off that. And most of the time, by the time something is well-known within culture to the point where everybody at the office or at school is saying that thing, like the people who started that aren't saying that thing anymore. Like that's already done. So I was kind of like, how much do I really want to delve into pop culture? But what I did want to talk about was really just like the way that, from my experience, Black and Brown families and communities have worked together and how like the generations are so tight and look after each other and care for each other in this special way. And so it wasn't unusual for Miles to be like, yo, I want to donate my easel savings toward this thing. And, you know, it's not in the scheme of things all that much money, but it's just like, that's what we do for each other. You do what you can, you give what you have. And I think that is a part that transcends time. That's what we've always done and always known. And that was a big part of what I wanted to convey was just the sense of community and pride that we're going to do for ourselves the way we always have. And we're going to look out for each other. And it doesn't matter what the obstacles are. At the end of the day, we have love and pride and support and community. So that was what I wanted. And I thought, you know, yeah, I'll throw in TikTok. And the thing about it is, like you said, I'm like a little bit older. My friends sometimes will give me a hard time though, because I listen to that music and all that stuff unironically. Like I enjoy it. I'm not out here just trying to like, oh, I want to be cool and I want to like know what people are. When I'm by myself, no one will ever see me. I am like singing those songs, doing those dances terribly. So all of the stuff that I try to like include in the book, I hope it comes from an authentic place and just me trying to infuse Miles with the three-dimensional personality that he has and that he deserves.
So you've talked about it a little bit, but one of the things about the book that I loved the most is that it does not fall short in puns, dad jokes, and quips, which are necessary in a Spidey story. But was it a challenge to bring this almost like essential Spidey trait to this type of story? And did you just have like a running list of like just puns? You're like, where can I fit this one in?
Yeah. The real talk is like, if there was like an outtake reel at the end of this thing, you'd have 20 pages of just jokes that didn't make the cut. It was just like, yo, we don't have the space for this, bro. Like, this is a 100-page book. Like, chill out.
But can you just send it to me? Because
I can. You know, the funny thing is, after a while, they're like, I don't think you'd be making a joke right here. Like, I'm just like, but that's me, though. That's what I've always loved about Spider-Man is that he makes jokes at like inappropriate times. That's what he does. He quips. He's funny. And he's super smart and observant, which I would imagine you have the powers of observation when you're like, you know, perched high above everybody else watching what's going on in the world. But yeah, I'm a big proponent of dad jokes. The more the merrier. My friend and I, we call ourselves the, I'm not sure we call ourselves, we've been named the joke assassins. We tend to kill jokes. We bury them and then we resurrect them. It doesn't matter how old that joke is. We can bring a joke back from like 7 years ago that you thought we forgot about. But when the time is right, we will bring it onto the scene. That's how we roll. And I, you know, Miles is like, to me, that's the kind of dude he is. He's like, yo, I got jokes on jokes on jokes. You know, and I had to give a couple other characters an opportunity to get in and get theirs in. But like, ultimately, it's like, Miles is like, yo, I could really just, I could go for days, but you know, you guys aren't ready. I'm gonna save some of it for the next book.
Oh, the joke assassins. Yo, I am over here dying. Oh, I love a good dad joke. It feels the heart. And I also feel like Miles uses it in general in the Spider family, in the Spidey family. It's like used to kind of distill the nervousness and almost as a tactic sometimes. Exactly. I need to distract you with this bad joke 100%. While I thwip you up.
I know, you're like, it's exactly right. I was kind of saying earlier, I wanted to give him a challenge that like he on the surface couldn't win. And it's like, he can't stop earthquakes. Right, he already lost that battle. He can't fix that. It's the one thing he can't do. But what he can do is help the people that are affected. He can stop the people that are trying to exploit the situation. That's what most of us can do. Most of us can't stop and thwart the big things from ever occurring. He can't stop a natural disaster, no matter how much he wants to. But what he can do is he can care. He can show up. That's what a superhero does. They show up. They care. They don't have to. That's the heroism that exists in us as humanity. Like, we could just show up. No one's asking you to have the best problem-solving abilities, but just like be there. Care about somebody other than yourself. Be empathetic. That's what I feel like is the most important act of heroism that we can have, is to be compassionate and to care about what someone else is going through, especially when their story is completely different than our own.
And I think the great thing about this book too, and you know, this is a phrase a lot of folks say, but I've said it and I truly believe it, is that superheroes are our modern mythology. And a lot of that comes from this idea that we look to them and their humanness, particularly in the Marvel universe, and how they deal with certain situations. And one of the things that also is really, really apparent, even with the earthquake and him helping the community and him working with his mother and these conversations he's having with his dad, he goes through the epitome of the superhero conundrum. How do I live life in the mask and out of the mask and do what's right? And it's such a wonderful, delicate balance. And you brought in some really cool guest appearances from some of Miles's superhero friends to help him with these very human, very real conundrums, as well as some ample help from like Miles's family and friends. Why was it so important to you that it's not just Miles going through this, but that Miles had an ecosystem, and especially a superhero ecosystem, that came to his rescue as he was trying to figure out who Terra Jean was?
Yeah, that's a great question. I think that, like, especially maybe in this country, we like to kind of prop up this mythology that anyone can just pull themselves up by their bootstrap and you can figure it out by yourself. And that's just simply not true. Nobody can figure it out and excel. There's not a single person you can point to and convince me that they did it alone. And the best things that people are doing is a part of a team, part of a community. Prior to becoming a full-time writer years ago, I was a registered nurse. I worked in hematology and oncology. I feel like I was a decent nurse, but I was made better because of the team around me. They cared. I learned stuff every day. I worked at a great hospital, but the thing that I took away from that whole experience is that, like, there's no substitute for someone that you care about sitting at the edge of your bed while you're in that bed and saying that they love you and just showing up there. There's no medicine better than that. There's no science better than that. I've seen that pull people through. And so it's no coincidence that, like, the best things that happen in life usually involve a support system. And so Miles is lucky to have that. And he kind of almost, I don't say he endangers it, but because he's trying to balance so many things the way that all of us often are, and you're like, okay, I'm trying to be cool with my friends and help them and be there for them. I'm trying to be the same for my family. I'm trying to, like, do my job well. I'm trying to do school well. Something is going to fall through the cracks a little bit, right? The good thing about family and friends is that they're going to tell you that, you know, you're messing up right here. Like, we need you to step up. And because Miles cares, and because he's trying to do the right thing, he's simply falling short in some areas at times, then he's like, yo, yeah, I got you. Almost to his own detriment at times, right? Because he's like, falling asleep everywhere. He's dead tired. He has a hard time saying no. He asks Peter at some point in time, like, yo, how do you balance? He has that question that like old people have, like, what's work-life balance? And he's a kid, man. Like, he just wants to draw and he feels inadequate about his drawing. Like, he has a support system that is also trying to figure it out around him, but is also giving him the space to make mistakes and then hold him accountable for the mistake. His mom isn't like saying, yo, you're killing it at school, I'm gonna let you take this night off from helping the community. Like, that's not how it works. You know, it's like, we gotta figure it out. Like, mom is like, yo, I just worked 14 hours at the hospital. Dad is like, yo, I just pulled a double shift. We all got problems, you know what I mean? Like, we all gotta show up, and that's life. And as a kid of color, as a person of color, let's just be real. Like, you have added responsibility that other people don't have, that other kids don't have. You don't get to have kind of that same quote unquote innocence to just disregard like what's happening in the world around you. You are, regardless if you want to be it or not, are in constant conversation with the world. And so thankfully he has a strong support system. You know, I talked about my mom being a librarian educator. I'm not doing this if not for her. So I wanted Miles to also appreciate that. Like, I get to be the hero because everybody else are heroes in my life. That's why I get to do this.
Oh, my feels. I love that because there is this very clear linear connection to your personal experience and how you bring that to the story. And I love that. Also, which I don't know if this is personal experience or not. Who knows? Maybe you do have supervillains in your life. You had to welcome in two really very cool, really dope, and I hate to say that about villains, but super fun villains with Trinity and Vex. And honestly, I'm going to throw in Snow in there because the bad snowfall joke is never going to leave me. Thank you.
Yo, there's no dad joke. You know, I leave no dad joke on the churn. I'm not even gonna lie, when I had that one, I was just like, yeah, that's it. Like, it felt good. It just felt good. Cause
it felt good in your soul.
Like, no, don't get me wrong. Like, I realize that a lot of the jokes that I have and love are corny as hell. Like, that's, I get it. I'm comfortable with that. I'm good. I know where my humor lies. I'm good on the dad jokes. You're not gonna convince me they're not funny. I will laugh at them. I will laugh at the same one. It doesn't get old. So when I had the opportunity to throw those jokes in, I'm like, yeah, like, let's do it. And then Vex and Trinity, first of all, I'll be real. When they were like, develop this original idea, da da da, and I'm trying to create the story, in my mind, I'm like, how many people can I get away with like creating in this Marvel? Like, how many people can I add to like the Marvel universe?
Spoken like a true comic book fan.
I mean, if they would have let me, I would have been like, yo, the person that I create is like the big boss. We might not have gotten that snowfall joke. He would have just been like, whatever. But I had fun with them because I wanted them to be younger. So many times the villains are always like this old rich white dude who just like lives off in the cut and whatever. It's fine. It's good. But I just wanted it to be like younger people who would be able to like go back and forth verbally sparring with Miles and be on that same level and like have the same references in a way, like a big sister relationship, go at him as well. Like, nah, you're corny dude. Like, please stop talking to us on that level. And so then it's irking him when he's not successful and like thwarting them, you know, especially in the beginning. And he's trying to figure out what he has no idea, like what the connections are or whatever. Meanwhile, he just knows that there's these two young women who are kicking his butt, you know, all over town. And so the other part is like he's learning on the job, right? Like he is expressing some of his feelings of inadequacy at a point in time. Like, I still don't always connect on the web slinging. Like, sometimes I miss, sometimes this happens, sometimes I'm like afraid of failing. So are Trinity and Vex. They're learning on the job. They're brand new at this. And so I thought it would be interesting to see like people just kind of trying to feel their way through and navigate this superhero, supervillain landscape, and sometimes landing it and sometimes not so much.
So this was a team sport. That's a great thing about this genre is that you got to work with Pablo Illon, which is pretty amazing.
That's a Pablo.
What can you say for you in bringing the story to life was the most challenging or most fun about bringing art and words. That's what this is about. It's very different than novels and short stories. Mm-hmm. It is mm-hmm. definitely this collaboration. What was that process like?
First of all, Pablo's art makes me look infinitely better. His artwork is so good. When I started to see his concept drawings, I was like, oh, okay, I got to elevate my game even more. Like, I thought I was doing pretty well, but okay. It's that feeling like when you know that somebody's just kind of pushing you and motivating you to go into like the reserves. You're like, I didn't even know that I could, if I can match that level, but I'm going to try. And his artwork was just like so alive, so vivid, but he has a very clear point of view of his own. I mean, he's an award-winning illustrator and artist, and it shows. So in the beginning, because I had never worked on a graphic novel outside of fifth grade, shout out to Greg Wells, because of that, I was like, okay, how do I give instruction to somebody who really doesn't need me to tell them how to do their thing? So you're giving the dialogue in every panel. I didn't really understand that I was also supposed to give a lot of the physical description, including the stuff that I want to see specifically in the panel. I'm thinking he's just going to read my stuff. I'm going to give some general notes. And then he's going to be like, yo, whip it up, do his magic. Boom. And it's like, no, you got to be more specific about, you're kind of a director, right? In a way, like the way a movie works. What do I want to see in this frame? So in the beginning, I'm giving him like very detailed instructions. I'm like, I'm an artist. I got a very clear vision, how I want this to be executed. I'm a very visual writer anyway. So I'm like, okay, this is how I want to see it. And he would add stuff. And I'm like, okay, yeah, he definitely elevated that. As time went on, I was like, oh, he doesn't need a lot of notes. I'm like way more interested in like what he's coming up with. So now I'm giving fewer notes and he's just doing his thing. And then what I realized too is there's like passages where there's very few words on the page. And I did that because I was like, his art speaks volumes. It doesn't need my words. In fact, I'm only detracting from the awesome things that he's doing. The cool thing about Miles is that he also has the ability to be expressive even with his mask, in which a lot of superheroes don't get to have. And so Pablo really takes advantage of that. You get to feel all of the things that Miles is feeling, even when he is fully a superhero suited up. So Pablo's art is explosive, it's vibrant, it's fun. If you can make me feel like there's momentum in a comic book, actual physical momentum, kinetic energy pushing me, then you've done the job. And then my words just get to kind of like be some icing on there. So I couldn't have asked for a better collaborator. I didn't know Pablo before, but now we talk and it's cool. I found another friend and like somebody who's worked outside of this I also respect. So it's just like, it was a joy to like get to work with them.
This year marks the 10th anniversary of Miles Morales' debut in Marvel Comics. I'm sure you are aware. When we were kind of talking about this, there's been substantially more people who have been involved in his story in the last 3, 4, 5, 6 years, which is amazing. How does it feel to be a part of this like growing cadre of folks that are creating Miles's canon?
It's humbling. Like I said, you know, truly an honor. And I mean that to my core, because it's a responsibility that I don't take lightly. Not just because of what I think that as the writer of this graphic novel, I owe to the Marvel Universe, including the fans who are the people that support it and keep it what it is, and are doing the difficult work at Marvel and the fanhood of trying to balance the legacy, but while also paying respect to diversity and to where we're trying to go as a society, where we should be trying to move toward. And that's a delicate dance, right? Because what do we know people love? Like tradition. They talk about tradition and legacy and heritage and not changing the culture of the thing. But it's like one thing that we know as humanity is like, if you're not moving and changing, then like you're stagnant, you're dead. You've got to keep it moving. And so to be a part of the legacy now of that, and one, it's like something that you get to have forever. Like no one can take that from me. I get to forever have been a part of the Miles Morales legacy, which I know for sure is only going to continue to grow leaps and bounds, pun intended. And so I am honored by that. And I think about the names that came before me, and some of them are my colleagues. Some are people who are kind of in the generation a little bit before me in terms of writing. And it's the breadth and the diversity even within that group of people. It's pretty awesome. And what I found is that people who have been fortunate enough to work in the Marvel Universe, it really is kind of a family. You know, it really is. Like people are supportive and encouraging and want to give you advice and listen to you and help prop you up. And that's just been awesome to see. Like I said, Miles Morales was like a dream, and now it gets to be a dream come true. I'm still trying to wrap my brain around it.
What do you hope kids and obviously adults will take away from this chapter in Miles Morales' story?
So I write for young people, and that's by choice, because we love to say that young people are the future, but in reality, young people are the present, they're the now. So many of the things that have happened that have been positive in this country and in the world have come because young people have said, I am not going to carry the sins of my forefather, the generation before me. I'm not going to continue the mistakes that they made. I'm going to change it. I'm going to be accepting. I am going to be inclusive. I'm going to work hard so that people don't feel like they don't have not just a seat at the table, but a fair seat at the table, that they're going to be heard. And so that's the people that I'm trying to write to, because one, I'm like, yo, I see you and I appreciate you. I'm sorry that you have to do so much work, because my generation and the generation before that messed things up to the degree that we did. I'm sorry that you have to carry that mantle. If there's a way that I can help it be a little less burdensome or a little less heavy, and if I can do that through these stories, that's what I want to do. I want to show for that. So I write for young people, and I also write for kids of color, because the reality is that when I was growing up, and I, again, come from a mother who, I lived in the library. I grew up in the library. There were no books on the shelves for young people that looked like me. They did not exist. The crazy thing about it is that because my mom loved books so much, and because she was such a proponent of education, she didn't let that obviously stop me. I still read widely. And in fact, what happened was I ended up just jumping from like little kid books to like pretty more mature books, because there was a deficit during my adolescence of books that looked, felt, talked like me, that could give me something or teach me something about myself or just like validate me. And so I just try to do that for young people. And I hope that whether the jokes land or don't land, or the pop culture references, you know, are on, I just hope that they see, at the end of the day, it's like, yo, we're all fundamentally flawed people. Some of us care a little bit more about that than others, but never let someone stop you from doing the work that you are meant to do. That's what Spider-Man does. He never lets someone stop him from doing the work he's meant to be. I was talking to like one of my friends. He was talking about how like his daughter was having a hard time at school because she was super nice, super caring. And like one of the classmates who she was trying to help, who was having like quote unquote behavioral problems, whatever that was, didn't have a lot of friends. And so she was trying to befriend him. But then him and a couple other people turned the tables on her and started kind of bullying her. I hate to see that kind of thing, because to me, what it says is like, we teach people who are kind and compassionate and caring, so many times we make it hard for them to be that person. We teach them to change, like, oh, you got to be harder. We treat it like a weakness. Oh, you got to be out here. You got to be tough. You got to be whatever. It's like humility, kindness, compassion. That's not a weakness. That actually takes strength to say, like, I'm willing to be vulnerable with you, even if it means I have to get hurt to make the world a little bit better. Spider-Man has to be willing to take those blows. He's going to get hit, but he's still going to go out the next night. And that's what I'm trying to tell these stories. And so, yeah, I hope adults love it. Honestly, like, I'm not writing with you in mind. I hope that you love it, because I'm an adult too, and I'm thinking about adult things. But so are these young people. They're not absent from what's happening in the world. They're actively a part of the conversation. And I think we do them sometimes a disservice by pretending like they're not doing a lot of the heavy lifting, or like they're not out here actively trying to make the world better. And, you know, we want to be the get off my lawn person. Really long way to say that, like, I just wanted to like really inject the heart and soul into Miles, because I think that's what makes him stand out to me. Yeah, he's grappling with all the stuff that superheroes grapple with, but it's like, man, at the end of the day, he's just like a good dude. He's a good dude who just cares. And he wants to do good at school. He wants to play ball. He wants to have great, great art. He like has crushes. He's falling asleep on his parents and afraid that he's not measuring up as a son. Like, he's doing all the things that all of us do. He just also happens to don a cape, but he takes all those roles seriously.
Thank you so much, Justin, for joining us. It's always a pleasure to talk about Miles Morales and the authenticity of his story. I mentioned Miles Morales Shockwaves is out now, so go buy it, either for the middle grade readers in your life or just for yourself. It's a delight, no matter what age you are. Next week on Marvel's Voices, we're talking about America Chavez and Sam Wilson and what it means for them to wear the stars and stripes as people of color in the Marvel Universe. I'll talk to Kalinda Vasquez, writer of the New America series, America Chavez, Made in the USA, and Christopher Priest, writer of Sam Wilson's 1983 solo series, The Falcon. So you have time to read up before then. Get to it. Marvel's Voices is produced by me, Angelique Roche, Alexis Williams, and Isabel Robertson. Our creative producer is Harry Goh. Our development manager is Brad Barton. Our production manager is Larissa Rosen. And our executive producer is Jill Duboff. Our theme music is composed and performed by Kamal Wynina.